Baby, all right, we got another episode of The Craft here today. My name is Nick Pollock. We're going to talk about pitching. Guess what? I know, it's surprising. And I got just the guy this week to talk about it with me. It's Eno Saris of The Athletic. Eno, good to see you.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
All right. I was at a game with about 500 people last night.
Say what?
Yeah, A's game.
Oh. So you were okay. So you're with them, but not with them. I thought this was like some corporate event or something. You know,
well, once I counted every human being in the seats.
Oh my gosh, no, you didn't.
Yeah, and I only got to 1,800, and that was like
it was that boring of a game. I mean, it was Estes versus
no, like 2 years ago that I counted. Oh, okay. So last night I could have counted, and it would have been easier because it was even fewer people, but. I was actually you know, Shane Boz was pitching, and I was actually thinking, because Shane Boz has been in the minors recently, I was actually wondering if Shane Boz was like, this is a minor league start.
This feels better for me. Because it's like, I'm going to dominate these guys. It's a minor league start. It's fine. And he was actually kind of interesting. It was slider, four seamer, fewer curves. Slider isn't the destroyer of worlds, as you described it. Unfortunately,
I think he was like down in velo over the course of the game. I mean,
was he?
It's kind of hard. You have to, if you're at the game, you kind of have to follow along on the computer. And I was watching all sorts of games and watching Bueller and watching, watching a bunch of different games at once. So my impression, and I haven't actually checked this in the numbers so well, was that he was 96, 97 in the first. And that he was 94 in the sixth.
All right. Well, I can actually give you that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
We're talking about Shane Boz, I guess this would be Tuesday start. Mm-hmm. It does look like that he did dip around 25 pitches or so, but then he did spike more after that. Like he went up and down. He had a few that were lower, but I think by the end he was actually at his peak. All good there, I think, with velocity.
Right. Well, he sat 96 for the game. So, you know, I guess.
Yeah, he was sitting 96, 97 later in the game.
That was good. Yeah, I do think the two-pitch mix for the large part was just working for him.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But at the same time, like when you come out of a game against the A's, you know, with two strikeouts,
Four for Shane Boz, yeah.
Was it? Because must have struck out the last guy or something. It was at some point, like he'd been through like five with one strikeout, I think.
Yeah, he was just kind of cruising, throwing strikes with four seamers and sliders, and they were just obliging. And I was like, all right, let's keep moving.
I guess, yeah, but Oakland is the fourth highest K-ing team in baseball this year.
Well, right. I mean, this goes into what you were saying a bit about how the slider isn't as overwhelming. The four seamer wasn't spotted inside the zone well. That is, it was just kind of, hey, YM lock, right? Not high lock.
Yeah.
YM lock being middle height. So that's probably what's going on. They were passive on the four seamer a little bit too. It's just one of those games. I think my takeaway from the start for Shane Boz is you don't have your secondaries as in the place that we necessarily want them to be, but at least you threw strikes, and that's all.
It's weird when you look at like a 113 stuff plus and a 111 stuff plus on the breaking balls, but you know, at this point, like 105 is a good slider, and mm-hmm. you know, like a really good slider is like 125. So
right,
he's more fastball forward than he used to be.
To get to a strikeout, you have to get to two strikes. And this was a game, I think, of the A's being more aggressive than usual, swinging a lot. 42 pitches they swung at in this one. And they made contact, and these weren't the most pristine spotted pitches. So they just went into play and they found gloves and just kept going on, you know. One of those days for Shane Boz. Estes on the other side kind of did the same thing of just like four seamers over the plate. And like the Rays are like, we're not good either. So that was that start.
Yeah.
I hope you had a good time.
Painful at bats, and it went really, really fast.
Oh man,
they were just chewing up batters,
right? And also next week, I want to remind everybody, we are not going to be doing this live on Wednesday. We're going to be doing it live on Friday. We're still nailing down the exact plan. I think the tentative plan right now is to arrive right away at the stadium for the August 30th Giants and Marlins game at Oracle Park. And we're going to try and do a live podcast with some of the people that we are going to this game with. I don't want to say who, because if they can't make it in time, then people might be disappointed, but they're great people.
I think Bay Area people, and we'll see who can make it. And I think the details of where we are will be, you know, nailed down, but it'll be either like sort of 5:30.
Yeah, exactly.
Pacific time. So a late night stream.
Oh my gosh. It should be really fun. I'm going to have like a tripod, set up the iPhone, get a like one of those Bluetooth microphones that people have with like the fuzz on it or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. It's going to be a blast. And if you're in the area and you're thinking about going to that game, maybe you should go to the game, hang out with us. It'd be a good time. So we have research today, guys. We have that's kind of the name or the word of the podcast today. All right. And I'm going to see if I can actually keep that up every week. What is the word that we're going to use? And it's research. because Eno's got
like stuff, Sesame Street. Yeah. The word of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Change word. Research. Because this is something that we don't talk enough about, I think. Is we're talking about pitching a lot as an insular thing, as a process that the pitcher goes through. And I joke all the time that hitters are cardboard cutouts that just serve the purpose of throwing for the pitcher. And in actuality, it is something that the hitters adapt to. And some teams are better than others at figuring out what's going on. I actually think a really good example right now is what we're seeing from against Tyler Anderson. Is where we saw the Jays and then the Royals, both teams selling out for high four seamers and cutters and obliterating them and getting beat on the changeup. We're seeing these high whiff games on super high changeups, but 12 hits yesterday for the Royals. And the Jays beat them up before that. And that's the game plan. What is the book? How are guys attacking them? Especially by now in August, the book is pretty laid out there. It's easy to read at your local library. So teams are making adjustments, and you wrote a piece, I believe you co-authored one on The Athletic, that you put out talking about how the Red Sox had a game plan that was different and new and was working for a bit, but it might have slowed down for them.
Yeah. And the way into this was, you know, in the off season, I said, you know, I like this Boston Red Sox, you know, rotation. And we talked about how we like different members of the rotation on this podcast. And I made a bold prediction saying, you know, there'll be a top five staff in the American League, which I might, you know, make it on the skin of my teeth just by making it more milquetoast. If I'd been more like top five overall, I'd be yeah, losing right. that one now, but I still have a chance since I said American League. but anyway, what they did was come out, you know, gangbusters, making us look super smart. And they had like a 2.2 ERA in March and April.
Yeah.
And they threw fewer fastballs than have ever been thrown before. And to be fair, that is a trend. And, you know, in the top five of the fewest fastballs ever thrown are also the Rays this year and the Twins this year.
Yeah.
This is me adding four seamers to sinkers. I didn't add cutters in. You know, so there's been they basically took a trend that's happened and threw it into hyperspace because,
right.
you know, their combined number is for this year is 35% for the staff for fastballs and sinkers.
Wow. I remember a start of 40% fastballs from like Aaron Civale or something one time. And I went, whoa.
Yeah.
Amazing. You know, Lance McCullers did that once under or threw more breaking balls.
The whole staff at 35%.
And everyone's doing that. And I also remember initially it
second
was
place
just
is 41%, like you said.
Right. Yeah. It was just four seamers at first. And then you're saying, no, not even that too, because I was like, well, Bayo's there. And that makes sense because he's a sinker baller. Hauk is there. He's a sinker baller. But now even including that, they're still at the bottom of it.
Yeah. And so, you know, then of course, everybody who, you know, plays fantasy or has been playing or is a Boston Red Sox fan or has been paying attention to Hauk and Cutter and these guys has known that they've fallen off pretty hard. In the second half, they have, you know, so part of it was like replacing fastballs with sliders. In the second half, they have the second highest slugging percentage allowed on sliders in the league. And that's a big part of the story. When I found when I was digging into it is they also have high swing rates on the sliders. Mm. And if you look at each of the pitchers, you know, one by one, you start to say, whoa, the highest swing rate months against their slider in their careers are all since April. And you're like, oh, okay. And then I texted a friend of mine who's a hitting coach for a team, and he said, yeah, I told all my guys to sit slider against the Red Sox. And the funny part was, I didn't put in the story, was that like, he was like, yeah, and like four of them listened.
I mean, that's the thing too, that is, I think we don't talk about enough, is just, you know, with any sort of team you're on, getting the people all coordinated and unified is really the hardest task here.
Oh my God. Yeah. And then he started kvetching about one of his hitters in particular. I was just like, all right. I don't need all this. You know, I just wanted to know about the Red Sox. But, you know, so what I think, you know, has grown out of this is there's a discussion to be had about how we model pitches, you know, stuff plus how we think about pitching, because in a way this is turning things on its head. And when you look at different pitch types, the highest swing rates are traditionally fastballs, and the lowest are like curveballs. And it makes sense, because you're timing to the fastball. You know, the curveball is this big old bendy pitch, and if you're thinking hard and straight, a lot of times you see the big bend, you just don't swing. You just kind of, you know, stop your swing. And so in Boston right now, it's been put on its head, the higher swing rates on sliders. And, you know, when you say things like, oh, well, the slugging percentage on fastballs is so much better than it is on sliders, why don't we throw more sliders? Or when you say things like the average stuff plus on a slider is 105 and the average stuff plus on a four seamer is 95, why are we not throwing more sliders? You're saying that within the context of batters swinging more at fastballs, you know?
Right.
And so the reason the slider is so good is it looks like the fastball in some ways. It's closer in velo to the fastball. It doesn't have a big hump. And then it comes in, you know, bat inches lower than the fastball, you know? Yeah, right. So you're just like, boom, over the top of it. But, you know, when I looked at middle breaking balls, they had a higher slugging percentage than middle fastballs. And if you think about it, if I'm anticipating it, it's down the middle. If I'm swinging at it and I got the thing right, wouldn't it be easier to hit something that's 85 and I anticipated than 98 and I anticipated, you know? Yeah. So, or whatever the numbers are, the slider's going to be lower. So I don't know if the slider is inherently harder to hit. And so that kind of turns models on its head a little bit, that, like, you know, and we've had some discussion, you know, I saw Alex Chamberlain and others talking about, should we somehow be awarding this value back to the fastball, you know, in our models? The fastball has to be good enough to convince them not to sit slider.
Right.
And so we somehow put that value of the slider back into the fastball to kind of reflect this.
Man, that's so interesting.
And so there's a lot of sort of secondary effects that you're like, wow, what do we do with this information? Like, what happens when the batter starts sitting slider? So one thing I wanted to do real quick was I looked at the highest usage sliders that have the highest swing rates. And there wasn't really a pattern, but then I looked at the ones that were used, because I think, you know, there's a few reasons that a batter could swing a lot of the slider. It could be bad. Mm-hmm. It could be obvious, like it could have a tell of some sort.
Right.
And you mentioned one, which is it could be in the zone a lot.
Oh, you're all right. Yeah, sure.
It could be in the zone a lot. So it could just be like, oh, this guy throws the slider in the zone a lot. I got to swing.
Yeah, right.
So what I did was I looked at batter ahead slider usage. And so these are pitchers that go to the slider heavily when the batter is ahead. So when they need a strike, when the pitcher needs a strike. And something kind of emerges here. So the group that I have of heavily used, high swing rate, you know, batter ahead, you know, sliders, it has some good pitchers in it. Dylan Cease is in this. Logan Gilbert is in this, you know.
Right.
Jack Flaherty is in this. It's kind of definitely. People you think are in it, right?
Yeah.
Kenta Maeda is in it. This is where the list of good ones ends. I'm just talking about people you might be expecting to be in there. Zach Littell is in there. That's your whole thing about Littell. It's like he just fills up the zone with Dendy stuff, right? So, you know, the group average for this is a 395 slugging. The league average on sliders is 372. The group average in this group for the slider stuff plus is 112. League average is 105. Hmm. You know, so despite having a better than average stuff plus, you know, these people are allowing bigger slugging percentage because the batter expects it.
Yeah. So a couple quick things I do want to mention. I have like a long rant I'm going to save for utilizing outcome results for a pitch type success or failure.
Right. No, I understand what you're saying.
I think you agree with it completely. This is not to push against this analysis. But
I was left looking for something to kind of.
No. You're doing it right now. I'm saying in general, just be like, okay, just make sure everyone, when we're thinking about like, is the slider good or bad, don't just look at the slugging because.
Right. These pitches still could be good.
Right. They could be good. It's just and you were just looking at only the outcomes. That could be a small sample of outcome.
It could be a year long thing, but also, you know, these pitches could be good, but they're anticipating them. So.
Right. So I just did a query. I can do them too, you know. We have a pitch type leaderboard on our site. And I'm looking at sliders, at least 150 thrown. And you got me thinking about ball and play percentage.
Hmm.
Ball and play in SIP percentage, strikes and play percentage. I think SIP is what you're looking for, really.
Because if you're anticipating you see it, you're going to swing at it if it's in the zone.
Right. How many of the strikes that this pitch earns are in play?
Right.
Right. And that's actually, I came up with that one because Kyle Bradish bothered me. Kyle Bradish is four-seamer.
Who are you going to sit slider again? You're going to hit sit slider against Kyle Bradish.
Well, the thing is.
Or whatever that breaking ball is.
He's figuring that out or like has been. And I was really looking forward to this season from him. Obviously didn't happen in the way that we expected, but. His four seamer is a detriment. It is the pitch that to me is it just has bad movement that just helps batters out. And I was pretty much thinking in my head as he had his breakout, I was like, man, I feel like we're getting more called strikes in this four seamer over time, and fewer of these are getting put into play. And that's what happened is that his SIP percentage went from like 20% to 10% on his four seamer. That's a huge deal. That means that
that's batters, when he's reducing the usage, right? Because they're not expecting right. They're not sitting
exactly.
Anymore.
Essentially, yeah. It's how many times are my at bats ending on a four seamer and in a way that I don't want it to.
Yeah.
You don't want four seamers in play for Kyle Bradish, right?
Because or especially in the zone,
right? So if you're getting strikes on it, like don't be in play. And you can see high strike rates. And if you see a high strike rate with a really low SIP, it's like, oh my gosh, that's an incredible CSW or foul ball or something like that's good, right?
Or that might also be a pitch they just don't expect. That's not a pitch that you necessarily ramp up the usage of and
exactly.
It's going to be great.
Right. So if you're telling me, okay, cool, you have sliders that you throw X amount of time and it's a high strike and play percentage, that might be in my head of, oh, that is guys are ready to swing at it and go after it. And it's not swinging out of the zone, right? Because those would be swings that are, strikes that are not in play.
Right.
So here I did a query.
Or not strikes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't have SIP percentage. I do have early ball in play percentage on sliders. Which to me, if you are an early ball in play on a slider,
that means
that you're is throwing in the zone and they're sitting on a breaker as opposed to a fastball. Right.
Yeah. Because normally you attack early to get the fastball.
Right. And normally like guys are saying, cool, I just want to, all right, I just want to heater down the pipe. I know that my one spot. And if it's a slider, they just let it go. Right. Yeah. You normally get what I call free real estate, which is a breaking ball or a slider just generally in the zone. And most times that's just a called strike.
Right.
But if you have a high ball and play percentage on it, then it's generally going to be set on. And well, I don't know if this is that telling. Maybe I should increase it from 150 pitches to 300 because these are all just like the worst pitchers in baseball. I'm gonna push it up to
Mitch
500
on there.
Zach Littell is number one.
There we go.
Right, that makes all the sense of just like this is a guy that does Dancing with the Disco, right? Just throws in the zone, and that's actually a lot of these guys. We have Simeon Woods Richardson at 13. At
Simeon Woods Richardson is on my high swing rate list. Yes.
Miles Michaelis, 18%. Justin Steele.
Steele's on my list.
Now, two Mariners at 2-6. It's Logan Gilbert and George Kirby, which is pretty interesting. John Gray is here. Ronel Blanco.
Logan Gilbert has a 146 stuff plus on the slider from us, which means it should be one of the best pitches in baseball. It has a 354 slugging against, but there are people with better slugging percentages against.
Yeah.
And he throws it when the batter's ahead, he throws it 50% of the time. There are people who are sitting on Logan Gilbert's slider despite it being a 146 stuff plus.
Right. It's kind of wild. Like when Gilbert came up, we're like, oh my gosh, you are an extension god.
It's all fastball. Like you haven't figured out your secondaries. Your curveball sucks. You thought your curveball was good and it sucks. You came up with a sweeper and you can't command it.
And now he's found this slider and he found it the second half of last year, Logan Gilbert.
Fall into total love with it.
And the four seamer, I think, has, I guess, like gotten hurt by it. Like it's not overwhelming like we want it to be. It's so weird. Are we still like figuring out who has a better fastball, Kirby or Gilbert? For those who don't know,
years later,
23, First Pitch Florida, we had a debate about like who has a better four seamer, Kirby or Gilbert, after the second year for Gilbert, first of Kirby. And I was like, it's Kirby, 18% swing striker. You're like, it's Gilbert, stuff plus is higher.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Gilbert's metrics change a surprising amount for somebody whose results don't change as much.
Yeah,
like he's been really steady results wise, but you're like, well, the extension has kind of changed a little bit, and this has changed
a little bit. It's all very strange. But I want to go more into just kind of going into like the repercussions of this and everything else that you kind of found out really by going into the slider usage and seeing like who is sitting on it. We're going to go after all of that. We're going to talk about all of that after this break. Welcome back. We're going to continue talking about this with sliders and if guys are sitting them or not, who's getting burned by that. So I think you found a little bit more here as you dove deeper into this whole question.
Then I just did I went all the way back out of the rabbit hole and just said, okay, you know, take away all these swing rate things and take away the stuff and just look at who throws their slider the most when the hitter's ahead in the count.
Yeah.
And just pick some names off it. I mean, some of these we just don't care about. Austin Adams, you know, is high on this list. Danny Jimenez, Stephen Okert. A lot of relievers on this list. But Clayton Kershaw is third in baseball, throwing his slider 61% of the time when the batter's ahead, giving up right now a 471 slugging with an 18% whiff. So as much as Clayton Kershaw always seems to do well in the regular season, at least, despite obviously declining stuff, I do think this is a little bit of maybe the canary in the coal mine, which is like, you know, his best pitch right now is very obvious, his slider. And when batters anticipate slider and he gives it to them, they actually do some damage.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that 5-run inning. That was a slider inside that was just hooked.
They must be on top of that. Now, so there are some pitchers where it doesn't seem to matter as much. There's your Gilbert, Cease. Cease throws it 45% of the time, the slider, when the batter's, you know, is the batter's ahead, and gives up a 366 slugging in those situations.
Quick question. What are you defining as batter is ahead?
I don't know.
So we have, the reason I bring that up is we have three different buckets for all counts. Early is 0-0-0-1-1-0 and 1-1. Behind is 2-0, 2-1, 3-0, and 3-1, and then two strikes is everything else. Mm. And for behind, we have Kershaw at 17% which is ninth for everyone with 150 pitches. Do you have Sean Manaea there? Because we got him at 20%.
I'm saying behind in the count for the pitcher.
Right. So they're behind at like 2-0, 2-1, 3-0.
Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah, it's a savant one, so I'm guessing it's basically just every time balls is more than strikes.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's wild. But anyway, Sean Manaea, is he on that list at all for you? He's the third highest for us, which is a little surprising because it's like, hey, you know what?
I think you have it backwards. Okay. because he's like,
I want to apologize to everyone. What's going on here is it's not when you are behind, what pitch are you throwing? It's when you throw this pitch, what is the scenario?
Oh,
so yeah, Clint Kershaw throws a slider all the time. So only 17% of the numbers when he's behind. I understand.
Oh, I see.
I completely messed that one up, but it is interesting to see the Manaea's like, oh no, I'm behind. I guess this is when I generally throw my slider.
One's saying that when he's behind, he throws his slider 11% of the time. So
he just doesn't throw sliders, I guess.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, guys. Going back to Clint Kershaw, that makes a lot of sense.
You got Gilbert and Stease, and I don't know how much to worry about them. But Spence, I think, is probably where I think this is the most interesting, because Spence has a 124 stuff plus on his slider and should be, I guess, better is the word I'm looking for. Given his results on the slider should be better given that stuff plus. And when you kind of look across his line, you think, oh, maybe, he can be good enough because you're 100 stuff plus, oh, good. But this is why I like that, pitch types are split out, when you see somebody who has very obvious, and this goes back to a discussion we had on previous podcasts, where it's like, is it enough to have a good slider? Well, maybe not. If you throw it so often and people know it's your only good pitch and start anticipating it,
Right.
You really need to kind of put things that are good enough around it. Like if you have like three or four other pitches that are 90 stuff plus and you actually throw them and everyone's like, ooh, like is the slider coming? Like Bradish is kind of like that. The slider's the best pitch, but his other pitches aren't terrible. They're good enough. And he uses them enough so people are like, ooh, oh crap, I thought it was gonna be slider. But Spence is a little bit more like, I'm behind the count, slider. I'm ahead of the count, slider.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That if he's in any distress, it's slider. If he thinks he can sneak something by, it's fastball. And his fastballs are not good. So I think you can kind of play along in his head. You can get in his head a little bit.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, 2-0, man, like pretty sure this is gonna be slider, dude. He's not gonna throw his 39 stuff plus sinker right now.
Yeah, so I think you mentioned this, but the cutter you're classifying as a fastball type, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So considering the movement of it, and we still have it as cutter, as like a cutter as a proper one, like from Savant, but it is kind of like a cut fastball, right?
That's how he describes it. He says it's his fastball. He says that it's he just needed to cut his four seam to make it worthwhile at all.
So the way I think about this with Spence, it's a 6 mile per hour difference between the cutter and the slider, but the cutter is at 90 and 84. And generally, I mean, I know this is a complete, massive label and it's very broad of what I'm about to say, but a batter is going to say, cool, what speed am I time for? I'm going to sit at that speed. And I'm also going to sit the one that I feel less confident in. So that I feel more confident that I can speed up or slow down, whichever ability I have. So for example, if I'm feeling like I can speed up well, then I'll sit the slider at 84 and then be able to speed up to 90 or vice versa. Considering the movement profile is generally the same direction, like it's just more exaggerated for the slider.
You would just have to slow down to hit the slider or speed
and
up.
It's at 90 to 84 as opposed to like 96 to 90.
Yeah.
So if you're just thinking, all right, I'm just going to sit slider as much as I can, and then hopefully I can speed
off
to
the cutter. Also, like, what does a fight off swing look like? Fight off swing is okay on a cutter because instead of like trying to get it out in front and maybe getting it on the handle, because it's moving towards you or whatever, instead of that, you slice it. And then you're like, that's fine. If I slice the cutter, I go oppo with the cutter. And I'm on time for the slider and can slug that thing.
Right. And we have it as a 99th percentile PLV slider for Mitch Spence. So
you have it as good too, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a 71% strike rate. Like, it's he throws a ton of strikes.
481 slugging.
Yeah. I mean, it's a plus 14 hit luck, right? Which is absurd. That's the third percentile.
Luck could be part of the conversation. But I'm just saying, like, on some level, these guys could be sitting on it.
No, I think what I'm saying is hit luck is if we're saying it's a high PLV, Hit Luck, it really takes it as a neutral batter and not anything that we're talking about here.
I know, right? Yeah. So it's saying it's been unlucky. It should have been. It's a better pitch than it's
been. A better pitch than results have been, but it's generally I use it as lucky as in like it's equivalent to BABIP in this way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really because in this conversation because we're saying, well, it's this good of a pitch and it's that hard to hit, but we're saying batters are ready for it, so it's not as hard to hit.
It's just sort of lurking in the analysis. I don't know how to throw it in yet. It's sort of something I'm kind of trying to come to grips with and like how I think about it. But I do think that if you're looking at a pitcher with the slider as their only pitch and the percentage is already really high on it, and you're like, they could be better than they are. Maybe not. Maybe part of it is, you know, maybe get that swing rate thing up and see how much they're swinging at that slider. And if it's, you know, generally swing rates on sliders are supposed to be like 46% or something. Mm-hmm. If it's over 50%, I would say, oh, okay, so batters are anticipating the slider.
87% swing rate, yeah. 57% swing. Sorry, 87th percentile. I apologize. 57% swing rate on that slider for Mitch Spence.
Yeah. So I think to some extent it is a good slider. Like maybe in a vacuum it's a good slider, but given that you actually, and this is a lot of this is about sort of starter talk, like the smaller your arsenal is and the more your reliever, then yeah, like I don't think it matters that much. That's why I kind of breeze by a lot of those relievers on the list. Mm. It's like, you know, yeah, Austin Adams throws a slider a lot. I don't know. Like that's who he is. It's
yeah. Right.
I don't think he's going to be, I'm not going to use Austin. I don't even know what his Austin Adams stuff plus is, but he doesn't seem like a great candidate for closing. If I'm looking at some guys I want to be closer, actually one of the things I do is just look at fastball stuff plus.
Sure.
Because I think that most people want their closer that can throw the fastball for strikes and for swinging strikes and dominate with that.
Yeah, what's and absolutely, I think really what you're saying is that look, I'd rather have guys that walk guys. I don't care about location plus as much. I just care about just be nasty enough that you're just making it so difficult for guys to get hits off of you consistently. I mean, that just more strikeouts means more or fewer chances in play to
of course all that, but I think this sort of anticipation aspect, and I think that's part of the, you know, a lot of what's going on in baseball, like people don't like to think that batters are guessing is a bad word, but I think that the work of a batter is to some extent to anticipate on a pitch and kind of, you hear batters talk about yes no. I think with velo being so high as it is, you have to kind of start your swing as the pitcher is pitching.
Oh yeah.
You know, and then you, and so if you do that, you have to start your swing with some sort of idea.
Yep.
And so you I think you prime the pump, you prime the brain and you're like, dang, this is going to be a slider. And then you start and you're like, I've got my slider swing going. And you're like, oh God, that's not a slider. And either you kind of like adjust your body to,
or you do that really difficult part of holding up your swing.
The best
hitters are the ones that do that effectively, honestly.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen those non-swings from like Juan Soto. I saw from Royce Lewis the other day. I thought it was really cool. Good. Like,
yeah. And how many times have you seen, like Soto does this a lot, where he takes a pitch. It's because it's not what he anticipated.
Right.
And then it's a strike, and then he kind of like,
he gives that look.
You know, looks at the pitcher or something. And
okay,
that was spicy, you know.
Yeah,
but there's definitely a mental aspect to this where, like, if you take the word guessing out of it and talk about more anticipation, that's the pitcher is trying to mess with that anticipation, and that's why sinkers and cutters are up. Is because now, I want to mess with your anticipation on the hard pitches and the soft pitches.
Yeah.
And even if my cutter is maybe not as good as my four seam, I'm going to throw some cutters sometimes when you expect the four seam, because I want you just always be off balance, even if it's the hard pitch or the soft pitch.
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, that's the fun of the game for me. I feel, I do think very much so. If you tell any batter, oh, it's just C ball, hit ball. It's just like, come on. Like that's only like the absolutes. And I think you'll find one trait that's consistent on every Hall of Fame hitter is that they have the best eyesight you've ever seen in your life.
Mm.
It's just, they can see it all perfectly. The seams of the ball, all of that stuff. Like that is, insane, and the heavy majority of players don't have that good eyesight.
How are you able to play with this as a pitcher where, like, were you able to pick up on, like, oh, he wanted something there? Like, he...
Oh, yeah.
He thought it was something else, and then I'm going to throw the thing he thought it was, but now he's going to think I'm not going to throw the thing
There's so much fun with that. Oh, gosh. Essentially, you do things like you throw a sinker inside, and you see him just jump out of his shoes to try and hit it, and he hits it foul. And I'm like, great, I'm not gonna throw the same pitch again. I'm gonna throw just like slightly further in and like see where that line goes, right? Of that.
Or like, what about why? Like, would you think about then throwing like a slider outside?
Well, I mean, that's the general book is like, if you see them being aggressive on something, that means that you throw something else on it. That's what they're going for.
That's what they want. They were sitting and they thought they got what they wanted. Yeah.
And the thing is, I subscribe to the belief that a batter doesn't change what they want a lot in an at bat.
So you think if you throw the slider outside, he's just going to spit on it because
he's still looking for a heater. I mean, if you throw one that's tempting, he's going to think it's a heater, then go, you know, and then swing over it. And like, I don't want to throw a fastball in the zone now. Is what I would think. If he's swinging first pitch on that and it's out of the zone and it's...
You would play with location.
I'll completely never give him that thing he wants.
Yeah.
You know? So that means maybe a slider out that looks like it's fastball. Maybe it's a changeup underneath, whatever it would be. I wouldn't give him that the entire time. And you can even do what I call the gambit, which is there's this idea once it gets to two strikes, it's the only time that a batter, I think, flips. Traditionally, this is traditional, guys. This is not like every single
changes his approach as a two strike approach.
Right
now,
two strike, it's all familiar. Okay,
now I'm going the other way.
Fastballs, all right. It's going to be the opposite thing now.
Yeah,
you're always going to throw now the breaking ball. What is it? It's out of the zone, right? So you throw it, and the batter doesn't swing, and he goes, "Ha ha! I'm amazing. I knew that was coming, and you didn't get me. All right, back to the fastball. Now. I earned that now." And the gambit to me is you throw a second one. Is that now you throw a second breaking ball or secondary out of the zone, and you got to make it good because the problem then is if you miss it, you're probably not going to double gambit, right? And then it gets really tough for that 2-2.
You run out of balls too, right?
Right. It's like now it's 2-2 and you're like, you know, it's it gets a little tougher. Like, how do you have faith that this is going to work now? And he's also seen it. Yeah. He's seen it twice in a row. So that's the kind of the stuff. I mean, I think I shared it with you. I got to refine it this offseason. I have a thing called the sequencing thing.
Yeah, that's on that.
I want to refine it a little bit because I think I can showcase more of these things better, and I can organize how the book works, like scenario to scenario, kind of like a decision tree. But I really implore everybody to try and play that game when you're watching, because try to see from the body language of the batter and what they receive, what are they going for in this at bat? There are so many times I see guys that are swinging early at a breaking ball, like you just outlined, like, hey, they're sitting on the slider. If they're swinging 0-0 at a breaking ball, that means that that's pretty much what they want for the at-bat, right? And that tells me, oh, man, you got to figure out how to get fastballs and get them off of this as soon as you can so that you can go back to that breaking ball. If you see them like just taking an 0-0 curveball in there, like you probably could throw another one. You'd be surprised. They're just like, yeah, I didn't want that curve. He just throws it, whatever, fine. Okay, moving on. And then like, oh no, I'll throw another one.
How successful do you think a batter or pitcher would be if they tried to just be completely random and just like take no information in? And the batter is like, I'm stepping to the plate, or maybe even have like a pre, like, you know how like a Bill Walsh in football used to just have like his first 10 plays were just like he had them and he's just going to do them. And he just did the first 10 plays. Yeah. So what if you as a hitter, you're like, I'm going to sit fastball, slider, fastball, secondary breaking ball.
Yeah.
Slider, fastball. And just like have like, and just be like, okay, second pitch. Yeah. I'm now sitting slider. Yeah. Like, I don't even know what the count is. I don't care. Like,
Right. That is
more or less success.
So here's the thing. So you're talking about the batter being random as far as their thought process, opposed to the pitcher being random. So first and foremost, believe it or not, there is a thing called the Rock, Paper, Scissors Championship, which sounds crazy. How could there possibly
exactly.
be one, right? But there is. And the fact of the matter is that there was a repeat winner. And that should tell you right there that it's not crazy.
Yeah.
So so there was this whole thing with my mom. I think I beat her literally 7 times in a row once. And like, it'd just be across different days. I just would always win. And so she bought me, when I was a kid, like a teenager, the rock, paper, scissors strategy guide. And I was like, I'm curious about this. And they had a thing called literally the gambit, where guys would go in and they would do all these reads about what they would want or not. Literally one of them, which cracks me up, is if they have a beard, they're not going to throw scissors because they're afraid of
they're afraid of scissors,
which still sticks with me to this day, of course. But it's like the subconscious idea of that, right? Just trying to get any sort of tells beforehand, and like how they deliver the hand and stuff, you can change the last minute. But because of this, they have gambits. They literally have it where it's like, this is the gambit where you just go rock, 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 regardless of what I get served.
Yeah.
Also, it's obviously, if anyone knows this, the most common thing, if you want to beat your friends, is subconsciously, we will always throw the thing that just beat us. So if you could put down a rock, they put down a paper, your next one's going to be a paper. It is just subconsciously what you do. So that goes into hitting, though. And going back, tying this all in, you can be as a hitter, you can gambit saying, if I know this pitcher is random, then I'm just going to wait for the heater. And I'm just going to sit the heater because chances are I'll get that.
If I'm a hitter, that's right.
You should be able to hit a heater that you're expecting pretty well.
Right.
Right.
It's truly random. That's true.
Right. If you're a batter thinking truly random, I think you're going to lose because you're just going to.
It's never going to line up.
You got to be able to. There are enough tells to be able to lean heavily at least 50-50 or something like that, you know?
Right.
If you're making yourself 25% getting locked in on the right one, I think that's just not right. I honestly, as a hitter, I would be the one guessing endlessly. Endlessly be guessing. Because for me, I feel like if I'm a hitter and if I make good contact like 40% of the time, I'm amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the best.
Right.
And it just makes so much more sense to me that if like I'm guessing at this, I'm going after it, I'm going to try and crush those, I will make more of an impact than reacting and kind of being on my toes the entire time or on my heels because of the pitchers. That's my thought process about the whole thing.
I think the game has gone in that direction, what you're talking about, because also we found that slugging percentage is slightly tied better to team win percentage than OBP was.
Interesting. Yeah, that makes sense. Home runs. Let's go.
Yeah, the league is going towards slugging, and for slugging, you kind of need to get the ball out in front. So if you get the ball out in front, and they're throwing higher and harder and harder every year, you kind of need to anticipate to make it all
right.
Work. Yeah,
that's a really interesting point. I never thought that we would move away in any way from OBP, but that makes a ton of sense. And that means also like walks make more sense as a pitcher then too. It's just as long as you're preventing the home run, Blake Snell,
blueprint.
Right. I mean, yeah. I will go back to this endlessly. We have a mistake rate stat, which is double the chance of a hit. When you throw a pitch, that is a double the chance of a hit. That is a mistake. Blake Snell was 2.4% last year. And the next person was 4%. Like this year it's like 3%. Yeah,
it's still good, but not like otherwise.
I mean, I should take a look at it since he came back from injury. But we'll look at that. We have a couple other guys we want to talk about. I have some fun things about. This is the research podcast. I've got research too.
The word of the day.
Gonna do that after this break. So really quickly, when it comes to mistake rate on a fastball, I mean, for his career, last 3 years, Blake Snell has had a 2.5% mistake rate on the fastball, which in league average is 7%.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's pretty ridiculous.
Isn't that funny that people think he has bad command? And maybe he does, but like he does not make mistakes. It's interesting. Is it bad command or is it just a strategy?
I mean, I do think it's a strategy. It's a tightrope.
Yeah.
Right. It's so hard to pull off. Some guys do. I mean, I generally call it the neck beard because you're just around the zone. You're not in the zone. Right? Like your mutton chops and your goatee.
Is the chin strap a neck beard? Do you remember that thing? Didn't Elvis Andrews have that for a while? Do you remember Elvis Andrews like used to like sort of connect it?
Oh, he did. Oh, man. I'm surprised that we actually don't have mistake rate, it looks like, inside of our game log. So I can't tell you how it has been since he's been great this year, but curveball's 3%, changeup is 3%, slider is the big one at 7%, but he just doesn't throw that anymore. So yeah, Blake's not doing that again.
I think that the thing that surprises me is that the slider goes in and out for him, and he'll even tell me that.
Oh yeah.
The slider is the pitch that goes in and out for him. And I think when he wins a Cy Young, it's the year where, you know, he even said early, I didn't have it, but then late I found it.
Right.
In the Cy Young season. And it's like, you know,
doesn't need it.
I mean, it's a really good curveball and a really good changeup, but it's a slider league. I think, you know, I'd rather he had it.
Well, it's a slider league for right-handers. It's a changeup league for left-handers.
And the curveball's a pretty good weapon for left-handers too, because it's pretty neutral.
Right. And the changeup has just been fantastic. And that curveball is as good as it's ever been for Blake Snell right now. I mean, I cannot express this enough. I don't think.
Yeah, when so my son and I sat there for Snell
and Sale
last week. And we were doing the anticipation game for sure. And there were a lot of times where I was like, here comes a changeup, or here comes a slider, or here comes a fastball. And he was curveball. He was pretty curveball heavy.
Yeah.
Snell was in that game.
Yeah, and, I mean, he's killing it.
I think it makes sense when we were sitting there watching, because it's not sideways at all. And so it's a very sort of over the top curveball. And so if you're, as the hitter, one of the things we noticed from sitting behind home plate was, as a hitter, sort of deviations from certain movement patterns, I guess it's tumbling, you know,
like
you get a little bit easier to see when something like JP Sears, for example, has really cut down the sweeper usage. We got a little tweet about that.
Yeah.
And he's been better recently. And I think that's partially because, you know, if you're kind of throwing what Sears throws normally, and it's all sort of more vertical than it is horizontal, to have this like one pitch that's like, here comes the frisbee. Like,
yeah, right.
That's easier just to, like, you know, probably not swing at it.
It's like the magic eye images, right? You cross your eyes and the thing that pops out. You know, if you know those books that you put your nose to it and you pull it out and you see 3D, I mean, that's what kind of it looks like.
Must give me headaches.
I just learned how to cross my eyes without pulling the page back and forth, because I'm a weirdo. But it's the same kind of idea of, like, you see the canvas of everything, and then the frisbee slider just is so apparent outside of that, right?
Yeah.
Snell is over the top. It's why it's the Blake Snell blueprint, guys, because it stays up with the four seamer, then the curveball comes straight down underneath it. And what also just makes it so tough is that thing moves a ton. And it's, you know, going back to the whole sequencing thing very quickly, like, even if you know it's coming, you still got to hit it. Right. It's, and I think curveballs are particularly really hard to know just how far it's going to drop.
I was trying to, we did on Rates and Barrels with Trevor, we did a thing where we were like trying to look at how, if you were the Braves, you would attack Snell. Mm-hmm. And the thing that was so difficult was finding comps for Blake Snell's fastball. And I had to kind of take lefty righty almost out of it, because
you don't have mates over the top guys.
96 great ride over the top, like Mackenzie Gore is probably maybe the closest fastball to Blake Snell's, and then there's not really that much else going on there.
Man, I'm trying to think of this too. Maybe was Kershaw's at like 6 mile per hour increased
back in the day.
Yeah.
Vintage
Kershaw. Right. That's difficult. And the thing is, that four seamer isn't always like the biggest whiff pitch too. It's not really those. It's just the setup, everything. And they're just, guys are just sitting in the box just going, man, I just want the fastball. Where is it? Give it to me. Come on. And like, here's a curveball and a changeup that are just out of the zones. And the fastball, it's like, oh, that one was too wild. Okay.
Yeah.
And it does mess with guys. I mean, that's kind of what the effectively wild thing is. Like, batters have this anticipation. They just want the thing that they want. And then it frustrates them and they'll swing at things they don't want to swing at.
Yeah. Right.
You know, oh my gosh, watching Keuchel pitch in his prime, I felt annoyed for the hitter. Just
that was like, you know, Jamie Moyer was slow, slower, slowest. I feel like Keuchel was low, lower, lowest.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, he really represents the neck beard completely. Yeah. Like, it's, I can't express, everyone should be everyone is a better analyst than they think they are, because you subconsciously know these things as you watch it. Mm-hmm. You feel the emotions of both the hitter and the pitcher if you're in tune with it, right? Or if you're watching it and focused, because man, it's just like, oh, come on, Keiko, give me something that if I can hit, maybe, you know,
2 inches off the bottom, please.
Oh gosh. Oh, come on, Blue, don't give him that one too. Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's painful, honestly. I mean, it's beautiful as a you know, someone who appreciates the sport, but oh, it's like you're really gonna play it this way. It's like a really hard game of chess that you win, you don't feel like you win. You know?
It's got frustrating.
I hate those. Anyway, so I wanted to bring up this thing that I've been talking about with Kyle Bland a lot, and really was, it started with me just seeing that Ryan Nelson had 20 inches of IVB on Saturday against the Tampa Bay Rays. And that's just what, that's bonkers. To put that in perspective, if that is what he holds for the entire year, that is 100th percentile.
Among was it all in Tampa?
And that's the thing. It was in Tampa. So then I got some great responses on Twitter being like, well, yeah, it's the trap. I was like, well, hold on. Like, how much should I be working into this? And Eli Ben Porat had a fantastic chart that he made. He made two of them, which is just generally inside of different parks, and then said, you know what, we're going to do other half, a bottom half, which is the away pitchers. What are the away pitchers doing? Because we're not going to say like the Rays just have high IVB guys, so thus it's,
they could, yeah,
it's they, more they could, right? Half of the pitchers that throw here already, you know, biased towards it. So even there, I was able to just kind of, you know, by eyeballing it, saying, all right, like the league average is like 15.5, 15.7 for IVB on a four seamer. The trop is like 17 in change, and then you have like Coors, which is 12.5.
Oh my god.
Okay, so this is really helpful though. This is saying, all right, 3 inches drop going to course, and we saw that with Jared Jones, it was like 13 and change. I was like, but hold on, I shouldn't be afraid, it's course, right? Course does mm-hmm. things, this is what it does. Okay, yeah. Cool. And then this helps me understand that both Ryan's, because Ryan Pepio was on the other side of this one against Ryan Nelson. He was at like 19 and change with his IVB in that one, right? And it does make me think like, okay, what is it though about the drop?
It's important.
How, like, why?
Boz too, if he has a 116 like stuff plus overall, I've seen the biggest stuff plus splits are for Tampa in terms of
running
away.
It's got to be because of this. So I started talking further about this with Kyle, being like, well, should we be implementing this in PLV of saying like, what is like, I want an NIVB, which is a neutral or normalized IVB.
We did that for stuff plus for Colorado by altitude.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
There's no altitude adjustment to make for Tampa.
Right. And so this is something. And by the way, huge thanks to Eli Ben Porat. We have Johnny Neenstedt on Twitter. I put this out, which is release height mean release height by ballpark, which is bonkers to me, and which is essentially suggesting mounds are not the same height.
Yeah.
And Philly and San Francisco are near like 5.9, while the Mets, Fenway, Coors, the Dodgers and Padres are like 5.7 or so. And that's huge. And you're like, Nick, that's what, like 2 inches or so, 2-3 inches? I'm like, I don't care. That is going to change our IVB marks. It's going to change a lot here. How much have you heard about this at all? I got to ask, like anything of pitchers saying or batters saying, yeah, the mound heights are different at different stadiums?
Yeah, I wrote a piece last year where like Chris Bassett was like, Tampa's a mountain. And, you know, so if you want to look at my Twitter feed, Max Bay did another sort of follow up to that great tweet with a little bit more like sort of matching pitcher to pitcher and a little bit more sort of math behind it. But similar results for him. Philly, Houston and San Francisco were at the top, and they were about an inch and a half taller than the average. Detroit, Boston, San Diego were about an inch lower than average. And this is basically a park effect on a release point. So if you say it that way, you realize it may not be the mound itself.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the way it's measured. So it could be right. a calibration issue on Hawkeye or yeah. TrackMan or whatever. So it's, you have to, this is kind of where the nuance takes the steam away from like, you could be a hot taker and be like, Filler and Houston cheating, you know, like whatever it is, you know.
No, I wasn't even going in that direction.
No, but it is, just, you were talking about the challenge yeah. to us.
Yeah, as, yeah, sure, sure. Yeah, yeah, right, right. Models.
And,
but I mean, maybe. No, I'm just
kidding. No. So I suggested to Max that whatever the math was that he did that I don't understand, that he did on this release height, we should do the same thing for like vertical acceleration. So basically for like IVB. And if we do that where we match players, not just look at away is good. That's a good, decent way of doing it. But what you can also do is basically think about like match player to player, like almost like park effect, like just park effect,
yeah,
match player right, to player and weight by how much they pitch. And you know what I mean? Like sort of
mm-hmm. yeah.
do all the math behind it. Do that for IVB, do that for different things so that you then can basically neutralize stuff plus by it from park to park. And
yeah,
it doesn't actually surprise me to see Houston as an outlier on this, because for a long time, I didn't understand why Jose Urquidy, Framber Valdez, and Luis Garcia all had really major stuff plus away home away splits.
Mm.
And, and this year we've seen the same thing for Tampa. So, yeah. You know, personally in some of the places where I've had to make decisions like this, I've been really wary of Tampa pitchers away from home, because, you know, if you just look at Savali's like strikeout rate, a home and away, it was, and stuff plus home and away, it was pretty standout. And I haven't actually looked at, maybe I can do this real quick, but Shane Boz's, but if he's like a 116 fastball,
well, he was around like, there at yesterday against Oakland.
Yeah,
at least for us, it was still good. Our today's four seamer app that behind the PL Pro paywall has Shane Boz still as a fan for plus. That's really high at 120, 106.5 PLV location, but 16.6 IVB, 95-96 velocity. You know, a decent attack angle, decent extension, 120. It's not our exact stuff plus. There's more stuff that goes into that, but those are just from the basic shape metrics. That generally is my understanding of like, is this good yesterday or bad? Yeah, Reynaldo Lopez's was 127. Oh boy, that's a fun thing.
Let's see here. I was hoping there would be a home, an easy home away split, but it's a time split. So,
oh man.
Okay, so Oakland, and then he was home before. So if I do a 7-day split, I will get Oakland. If I do yesterday, I'll get Oakland. If I do a 14-day split, I will get home and away. So here we go. Shane Boz yesterday had a 116 stuff plus. Yeah, that's still pretty good.
Yeah.
And last 14, he's 118. So maybe it's something like, you know, 120 at home, 116 on the road. That's still pretty good.
Yeah.
But it is something to think about when I say things like Tampa Bay leads the league in stuff plus.
Is that right? Should we be saying that because of the park factors involved?
Yeah. So we are planning a fairly major revamp that we will promote and produce like at least a look into at First Pitch Arizona.
Oh, nice. Okay, Max Bay is going to be there, guys. I cannot wait for that.
Yeah, Max is going to present alongside me, and we're going to give some insight into where we might go with certain things. And I think that this is something that we can throw in there. Another one that I noticed for stuff less that people should be aware of is just that we did put in, when we did a revamp recently, we did put in the matchup, whether it was same-handed or opposite-handed.
Mm.
So the model knew when it was, when like a slider was being thrown righty-lefty or righty-righty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we did see sweepers go down a little bit in value because sweepers are not that good to opposite hands, right? So I thought this would mostly clean up the platoon splits that we've seen in Stuff Plus, where like Stuff Plus rates righties a little bit higher than lefties than maybe it should. And it didn't clean it up. Hmm. And the problem is that lefties have, you know, we were just talking about sitting.
Yeah.
Lefties have a sort of novel bias. Like you don't see lefties as much.
Yeah.
And so a lefty could theoretically have slightly less raw stuff. Like if you just look at numbers and flip the axis and just look at it as if he was a righty from the other side, right? And just if you look at it just through the numbers, you would say, oh, that's a 98 stuff plus guy. That's not a 100 stuff plus guy. But because he's a lefty, he's 100. Just because he's a lefty, just because you don't see him as much.
Yeah, right, right.
And if you think about sitting, things get worse if you're sitting on them and you see them a lot, you know, so you know there's some sort of effect there. And right. So what we might do in the next one is just take the distribution of lefties and the distribution of righties and just push the distribution of lefties so it's even with the distribution of righties. You know what I mean? We haven't done that. Other models have done that, and maybe we should. And I think that'll be, so that's a little bit like this. It's like, oh, parks have an effect beyond just altitude. We were altitude adjusting and we were thinking about, I think we did a little bit of weather adjusting. This is like, we need to adjust for maybe the machinery there or maybe the mound there.
Yeah. There's something weird going on. I'm really curious what it is. I have
100% sure.
I have a
Boston was an outlier and Boston is an outlier. And
yeah.
Like,
right.
They got a lot.
I remember there was a year also that like velocity ratings were wrong in Camden. And yeah. Andrew Perpetua was like, I don't know how you guys haven't figured this one out yet.
Yeah. Baltimore had like some early calibration issues.
Yeah. I've got one more surprise thing because it is research today. I really wanted to bring up. We're going to bring it up quickly. We're going to talk about that after this break. Enosaurus, foul balls. Okay. Foul balls, the bane of our existence. They are this weird, extreme, noisy thing. And watching a Gavin Williams start, and I know he had some thoughts on him, also with Renato Lopez the other day, I've realized I have multiple theories about foul balls and how we should be treating them. But I have this idea, and I haven't bothered Kyle enough to tell me the answer. So I implore anyone listening right now to maybe take a moment and see if you can get to the bottom of it. But I am willing to bet that when a pitcher has an extreme outing that is either much better than expected or just did not go their way that day in a weird way, foul balls follow in the extremity. That is, it is fewer foul balls than normal in a significant way or far more than in a significant way. Because what they do is when you have a fastball, either that is a beneficial thing in play, Bradish, or not, right? And if you're getting a foul ball on it, you are then getting deeper into the count and you are then opening the door for secondaries. But if you don't have good secondaries, then that's a bad thing. And then you want to be able to get those outs and get everything you want with a four-seamer already. So what I saw with, say, Renato Lopez yesterday is he had 10 strikeouts in 5 innings. How the heck does that happen? Well, he threw a ton of strikes with his fastball, ton of foul balls on that fastball. And then that meant that they had to go after the secondaries that are out of the zone. And he got 13 whiffs on curveballs and sliders yesterday. And I saw this with the Gavin Williams. And when I think about Gavin Williams on the other side of this, his curveball and his cutter and his slider are not really the dependable things that gets his outs. It's his fastball. But seeing all of a sudden a high foul ball number on that four-seamer, that means that those are not turning the outs that he normally would get or the whiffs that would be deeper in counts. So that is my...
That would mess up your analysis because you kind of want to say a foul ball is good or bad.
Right. But I can't because I can't even do... I thought even I had the answer of, well, non-two-strike foul balls are good and two-strike foul balls are bad. But actually, sometimes earlier in count, foul balls are bad because you want that in play because that's generally a good outcome for
you. That was going to be a pop-up. You know,
right.
That was my rise ball behind the zone and you just fouled it off.
Exactly.
I even talked to Lawrence Butler recently about like he started slamming four seamers when he came back and had a better, he had a little bit of mechanical adjustment with his head and he was seeing the ball better. He's slamming four seams. So what they do, they stop throwing the four seams. They start filling up the zone with breaking pitches. And then I was like, you don't have to tell me exactly what you're going to do. I mean, that's your thing. But like, you know, some of that's just battling and like fouling off some of those, right? And he's like, yeah, some of it's just like, you know, staying alive. And so a foul ball could be actually be sometimes good for the hitter because it's you didn't get the whiff you wanted, you didn't get the ground ball you wanted, you didn't get the pop up you wanted. Like, I get another pitch, you know.
Right.
I think the thing that it's a little bit like a cutter. I've been wrestling with whether or not a cutter is a fastball or a slider forever.
Yeah. To the grave.
A foul ball. Yeah. I think foul ball, the question that you cannot answer is it an almost hit or an almost miss?
Yeah. Well, that's so I actually think we can have a take on that because I think we can say which is the more common outcome when a swing is. Is it a ball in play or is it a whiff? And that I think foul balls take away from the more common one.
For that pitcher.
Yes.
The foul ball.
So if I have a
because it's a continuum of some sort, right? Sorry. It's a continuum. Right. So if they usually give up hits on that thing and they give up a foul ball, then it's probably closer to the hit side.
To the hit. So it's preventing
it. They usually give up whiffs and they give up a foul ball.
Then yeah. It's preventing that.
Oh, that might be studyable.
Yeah. That's been my theory on it. And now it's even like extended to, okay, then when we really see it, what is the impact? And the impact is that it either makes them, it really changes starts is we can actually look at that's just foul balls.
That goes into what you're saying too about this research is, you know, a bunch of foul balls. You want to look like just almost like foul ball deviation from the norm.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
You know, and almost take the absolute value of that.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure. Plus or minus. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Sort of the absolute and see how what kind of effect that has.
Yeah. That's where my head's at. I wanted to bring it up to you because I'm sure that you'd have.
Well, I mean, Gavin Williams' fastball has been fascinating me just because, you know, I don't think I've seen as like extreme of a drop in IVB from debut on as I've seen with Gavin Williams. Like,
oh really?
Like he came in the league with one, with a certain sort of IVB, and it just I was looking at a vertical and horizontal, and like he's just gone from something that had two plane movement when he first came up, to something that's looking more and more like a sinker, with every game. Let me see.
Yeah. Here. So where did he pitch? He pitched in Milwaukee. And now I'm like, okay, I need to see this chart. I'm
also talking over his career. Like, so when he debuted to now, he's lost 2 inches of vertical movement.
Mm-hmm.
And from when he debuted to now, he's added, 2 inches of horizontal movement.
Yeah, so this is alarming as far as like I see for the season it's under an inch difference from 2023 to 2024 for Gavin Williams' four-seamer. But recently home in Cleveland against the Orioles was 13.4 as opposed to like 14.5 or so. Then he went back up to 14.3 and then it's 13.3 at Milwaukee.
So it is going down in your numbers too, right?
But the velocity is up.
But the velocity's up. And this is why I think it's so weird, because I was just talking to Joe Boyle and he wouldn't let me all the way in terms of like what sort of adjustments he's made, when he was down in the minors. But one thing he did say was like, you can't tell me I move poorly if I'm throwing 100. You know,
yeah, right. Yeah.
I am optimizing, you know?
Yeah, right.
And so he said that, you know, to some extent when he went down in the minors, there was just an intent to throw harder and let his body sort of organize to do that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and then I also have talked to other pitching coaches where they said, you know, arm slot, fastball movement, a lot of that goes away if you chase velo, because velo represents the optimal movement pattern for that pitcher. Like, the further you get along in velo, like I could,
I'm following.
You could take someone who maybe throws like 97 out here and like force their arm slot up and like get that IVB. Right, do you think they're going to throw 97 like that?
Yeah.
You know? And so the most natural arm slot for them is probably going to produce the most velo. So in some ways, Gavin Williams is just like becoming his natural self.
That's a fascinating idea. I love
the vertical movement we want.
Yeah.
But he's probably getting enough value back by sitting 97 instead of sitting 95 or whatever.
Right, right.
So I think as a pitching coach, you almost say, hey, what slot, what type of movement, what fastball can you throw your hardest? And then we build everything off of that. And then we figure things out.
What is interesting, he's lost extension though.
I mean, I would say he's doing everything incorrectly except for the velo. You know what I mean?
He's doing everything wrong.
Except you
can the velo.
But it's a little bit like what Joe Boyle said. Like, what are you talking about? He's throwing 97. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I mean, okay, so I think his curveball is better than it was last year. I think you're talking about the four seamer.
I'm talking mostly four seamer.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, then he has to whatever he sort of settles on fastball movement wise, then he has to kind of build
around
off of that, right?
Yeah. So you don't have much faith, it seems like, in Gavin Williams at the moment. He's still kind of figuring it out.
Yeah, I dropped him in the league. He also has a bad start coming up. But
yeah,
I will say last 14 days, 103 stuff plus on the fastball. 138 on the slider, 121 on the curve. Like, stuff plus likes the direction he's going in.
I mean, yeah, it's really hard to dislike a guy who throws 97 with 7 plus feet of extension.
Yeah.
And this is honestly the thing that has, like, I made a big mistake this year of undervaluing Garrett Crochet by throwing 97 with extension from the left side. And it's like, well, it's not good shape, it's not good angle, and really, honestly, the major thing was, you know, the pitch mix was very questionable. And then eventually he got the slider shelved for the cutter. And that really changed things, which he didn't have. He didn't have a cutter at first.
I still think next year for him to be as great as he was this year, he actually needs another pitch. Like, he needs to be 3 or 4 pitches next year.
He's showcased that he has the changeup and slurve at times. And I say slurve because that's what they called it. But I hate that term. That's
just a slider. Me.
I just did not put together, for whatever reason, the most obvious thing. I went, it's like the bell curve. I think actually even Kyle
fastball go burr.
Yeah, right. The shape and everything is bad. Yeah, but he throws 97 with extension. Like, what? Who cares?
Yeah,
you know. So in Crochet, I'm watching Crochet, like, the swings are just so bad. They're so bad at the heater.
Even when they think fastball, swing fastball, and get fastball,
it doesn't matter, right?
It almost doesn't matter a lot.
I mean, I would just look stupid on the cutter, and I would just
try to miss location for them, right? Like,
yeah.
If he hits his location, even if they anticipate it and swing for it,
it's just so hard.
Yeah,
it's just so hard. And Gavin Williams, honestly, I'm saying this, like, wait, you're throwing 97 with that kind of extension, like, shouldn't that be somewhat similar to what Crochet is doing with his stuff? So that makes me encouraged for Crochet. I'm sorry, for Williams. It's just about, yeah, okay, you need to have his cutter too, and something else really to complement with it.
You know, 103 stuff plus is not bad, and 105 overall for Gavin Williams is good. And, like, you know, again, four-seam fastballs, like, average is like 95, 96 stuff plus. So he's comfortably above average. And so, yeah, you could spend too much time looking at those movement pages and say, you know, oh, I don't like this. And maybe it could be a 115 stuff plus fastball, but maybe it wouldn't be the same velo because you're making him throw some slot that's just not, you know, doesn't feel good for him.
95th percentile velocity, 94th extension for Gavin Williams.
Yeah, I didn't like, he has some tough matchups coming up. So,
I'm with you. It's the Yankees. Sure. Curveball needs to be better than it's right at 60% strike rate. That I don't think he has good feel for. He didn't have it last year. It's like a 50% strike rate last year. And I'm happy to see, like, that he went away
from that for next year. And you know,
I'm so excited for Gavin Williams next year.
Yeah.
It's so rare to find a guy with that good of a four seamer. You just don't get that. You know,
and if you're thinking about the postseason, like, as much as the full season stats for the Guardians rotation are like bottom shelf, like,
no, it's like hilarious
how they're like bottom five.
They are. Like, it drives me nuts. Really, Kai Correa, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Kai Correa. And then, but as much as that's true, you could sort of wash the slate clean and think about a 5-game series against the Guardians, and you're going Bybee, Williams, and the best, one of the best bullpens in baseball, especially when you shorten it. You know,
so, man, who else is that rotation?
I don't
know. Joey Cantillo.
Ben Lively.
Oh, okay. Ben Lively is an absolute masterclass of like what?
Yeah. Maybe you go one time through the order of Lively, one time through Cantillo, and then
he is the ultimate what I call Vargas rule, like the Jason Vargas. Just you're doing well, fine. I guess we're gonna roll with it. I'm not gonna tell you to stop this. And he even had a moment on the IL, came back, wasn't good, did his old approach, and it was terrible. It was like 4 walks and a strikeout. And I was like, well, this is probably not it. And then just did it again. 91 mile per hour fastballs. They're just kind of there.
I was fascinated with him and Yusmeyer Petit on this this concept of layback and like the invisible. So, you know, I did this story on Yusmeyer Petit, and his catcher told me, Andrew Susak told me, that he really leads with his elbow. And so the ball, he brings the ball up and then he leads with his elbow and then pop. So you don't see it. And so I wrote about that. And then some people were like, well, dude, everybody has layback. I mean, that's, if you just try to throw the ball, like you're at some level, like your ball,
your wrist is going to be behind the elbow.
Sure. You were even telling me that like that's a flaw that kids make sometimes is not doing that. You know, like you want to throw with your shoulder and then let the arm, you know, sort of catch up idea. Right.
Right.
So there's going to be layback, but I do think that some people maybe either hide the ball differently back here at layback or maybe have layback longer. Like there's, you know, you think about it, like there's different time where you get the arm up faster and get there like this. Or you could kind of pop up.
Yeah.
You know?
He is an extension guy.
Lively pops up. He kind of has a little bit of that Yusmeyer Petit, like, here's my elbow, here's
so
the ball.
Lively's
tall?
I'm watching him right now on the right here. And Lively, oh my God, he's nice. He's 6'4". Oh my gosh, is this what people think of me? 7 feet extension, though. This is actually hilarious.
89 miles an hour. Like I think he does belong in the Vargas rule category, but you can tell stories to like make yourself feel like, oh, he's doing this. But like, I don't think it's again, we just told the whole thing, fastball go burr. His fastball does not go burr. It's 89 miles an hour.
Oh God. Yeah. You need 3 months of burr. You need October and November. And
the other kind of burr.
But it reminds me, if I see a big extension guy throwing 90, the first name that always comes to mind is Bailey Ober. He doesn't have his changeup though.
Yeah.
It's so strange to me. I mean, is there just enough deception between the sinker and the four seamer? The ICR, the ideal contact rate on that sinker is 33%, which is so good.
68 stuff plus.
There just has to be something missing. I mean, he throws only 33% of the time on that four seamer. It's sinkers involved with it. Sweepers. Honestly, I remember seeing Ben Lively, who I called Raggedy Ann at one point because it was Ann Lively from Minority Report. And he just wasn't good, and that was it. And I don't do negative nicknames anymore, and so that one's gone. But that's what he was with, through sliders and trying to make it work like that. But man, it's weird, and that's a question for another time. We'll figure that. We'll come back next week with Ben Lively analysis. It's been an absolute pleasure. Quickly, anything you're doing before we meet in San Francisco next week?
Oh yeah, I might be listening. Different crew might be listening here. I'm going to do a meetup in Chicago on this Friday at the Beer Temple on Friday night, and I'll be there at around 6.
Beer Temple, 6 o'clock in Chicago. Be there, hang out with Enosaurus on Friday.
And if there's still tickets available, consider the Sabre seminar. If you're in Chicago, it's really fun. There's, you know, something on Darvishism, which is the idea of how much is the value of adding another pitch.
Yeah. Right.
And would a 100 pitch pitcher dominate the league?
Generator.
All sorts of really cool research that happens that week. And if you want a job in baseball, it's a place to be. They actually hire, they sit there and they interview people outside this Sabre seminar and hire people. So that's fun. And then next week, We will announce the details, but meetup, I think we can maybe manage to like put together a meetup together with this a live podcast.
Yeah, this will be so much fun.
That's for San Francisco. So Chicago this week, San Francisco next week.
All right, you guys heard here first. Thank you so much to Enosaurus for being my special guest in this episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock. And we'll talk about The Craft of Pitching again next week.